A reading from the Gospel of John. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the wine knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk, but you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee and revealed his glory. And his disciples believed in him.
There is so much to talk about in this passage. I'll try to keep it not too long. But I think a good way to start approaching the text is to situate it in our season of Epiphany. It's the second Sunday after Epiphany, and the word Epiphany is a Greek word that means manifestation, appearance, or revelation. And so during this season of the church year, we are telling stories about God's epiphany among us, God's revelation among us in the person and work of Jesus. We're noticing how God's presence among us is welcoming and transformative. How our ability to love and welcome each other generously is grounded in God's love for us. We love because God first loved us. So today's story, which reveals something about the nature of God, is at a wedding. A wedding is something we can all relate to, whether it's your own or a friend's or just one that you saw on TV. Weddings are something we all know something about. But before you get too comfortable with it, remember that this is not a 21st century wedding, whatever that may look like in your minds. So many commentaries that I've read on this passage draw upon modern Western stereotypes about weddings. The wedding planner hadn't ordered enough wine, shame on him. But they didn't have wedding planners, and they didn't just order wine. This was in a small town in rural Galilee 2,000 years ago. The bride and groom were probably about half my age. Maybe they were in love, maybe they were excited about that next stage of their lives, but probably most importantly, they were making a covenant between two families. Marriage in the modern West is a very individualistic thing, but it's not like that in many other places in the world. I want to tell you a little bit about the tribal Christian weddings that I've been a part of in India, because they're very different from ours. So first of all, they're usually arranged. When a young man is ready for marriage, his parents set off in search for a bride. So-and-so's auntie knows a family that has a daughter who would be perfect. And so the boy's family goes to the girl's village. And if they like the girl, they negotiate a bride price. This is the opposite of the Hindu practice of dowry, where the girl's family pays the boy's family to take her away. In tribal culture, the boy's family pays the girl's family because they're going to be getting an extra laborer. Anyway, after they agree on the financial arrangements, then they have an engagement ceremony, And then a few weeks later, they'll have a wedding ceremony and party in the girls' village. And then they'll have another big party back in the boys' village. And it goes on for days. It's not ceremony at 4, drinks at 5, dinner at 6, dancing, and gotta be out of there by 10 or you lose your deposit. They go on for a long time, and there are a lot of people. Everyone is invited, everyone from the villages and all of their friends and family. Some of my friends who got engaged last year were going to limit their engagement party to only 250 people, and they were roundly scolded for this. They're big affairs. They usually take place right after the harvest, so that there's enough food to go around. And the family aren't the only ones responsible for food. Usually extended family, friends, everybody brings animals or rice or beverages to share. And so when I hear this story and I think about the wine running out, I wonder whether it might indicate a lack of community support for the couple, that people didn't bring enough to go around. So that's sort of what I imagine this scene to be like. Chaotic. Quite different from most American weddings. And yet there's something here that we can relate to. They ran out of wine. It's disappointing, maybe embarrassing, certainly frustrating. And into this situation comes Jesus. In John's gospel, he's just been baptized 3 days earlier. He's called some disciples, and now on the third day, they go to a wedding. And at this wedding, they run out of wine. Somehow, Mary, the mother of Jesus, knows that Jesus can do something about this problem. There's so much in this text that we could talk about, so much behind this story that we don't know. We're invited to imagine, what was their relationship like? What had the last 30 years of Jesus's life been like? This is the first of his signs, actions that reveal his glory in John's gospel. And I have to wonder, did he just miraculously gain these powers at his baptism 3 days earlier? Or had he always showed signs of being a special child all those 30 years, revealing God's love in small ways over the course of his life? When Mary points out they have no wine, Jesus says, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me?" I have no idea what is going on there. Jesus says, "My hour has not yet come." As I said, there are so many things we could talk about in the passage, but I think that this line is really key because it points to this moment, the opposite of a wedding, of a feast of celebration, and yet paradoxically, the moment when Jesus joins most fully with human experience. Throughout John's gospel, Jesus talks about this hour in which his glory is fully revealed. And this hour is the moment that he is lifted up on a cross. It's an inversion of all of our symbols, because now death somehow brings life, and the cross somehow brings glory, a tool for punishing criminals. In that moment on the cross, Jesus takes on the entirety of human experience, including death. He's been places that you and I have not yet been. not only with us in our joys, but with us in our sorrows. All of that has been taken up into the divine. It's a rupture in the cosmos. Everything changes because God, think about everything you associate with God, has now experienced death. And death has not had the final word. But we're not there yet. It's not that hour yet in today's passage. Our story, the wedding at Cana, points to that great story of God's ultimate act of redeeming love and grace. But our little story today gives that big story more color. It illustrates what life abundant in community beyond the grave with Christ looks like. We think we've run out of wine. We feel this every day. We don't have any more heat. It's too cold outside. We think the party's over. But Jesus moves quietly in the background, telling people what to do without telling them why. And suddenly, voila, water becomes wine. A miracle. But more importantly, it's a sign. John describes it as a sign, the first of Jesus' signs, a sign that in a small but significant way reveals God's glory. Unexpected and mysterious, excessive, like this good wine at the end of the party when you thought there was no more. Excessive and welcome, like God's love for us. Jesus' love is like the good wine. We have a real example here, something we can taste and smell and imagine, introduced when we least expect it, shared with us when we would have been grateful for so much less. Jesus takes us by the hand and says, dance, love, because there is enough. There is more than enough. And when we breathe deep and open our eyes, we can see there is more than we thought there was. During the season of Epiphanies here at St. Lydia's, we're reflecting on Christian hospitality and the fount of our love, the ability, the source of our ability to welcome others. Hospitality is a kind of strange word. I feel a little claustrophobic around it. But it points to that idea of welcome. And what is that welcome that we extend here? And where does that welcome come from? That welcome in everything that we have is a gift from God. The little stories of Christian faith and the big story all point to this truth that we love because God first loved us. We welcome one another into community because we have been welcomed by God. This weekend, I guess today now, we're celebrating the life and work of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What a day for celebration. King preached this message of hope, this message of justice and equality, of brotherhood and sisterhood around the table together. When we think about that kind of welcome, that's not just platitudes, but that is standing up for the rights of our neighbors, standing up for justice. Where does our strength to welcome people like that come from? I know there's not enough strength in me by myself. I need community. And I need God's love. I need God's love to welcome all to that table. When our wells are dry, that's the well we turn to. The God who turns water into wine, who uses the cross to defeat death, who brings life abundant amongst us, who preaches that message of justice, equality, and hope. Imagine that chaotic tribal Indian wedding scene that I described earlier. Imagine some guests from that wedding were to show up at our storefront. How would we welcome them? What might they teach us? Welcome goes in both directions. How might they change us? How would they reveal God's love to us? The abundance that we share is not what we supply. It is all a gift from God. God shares it freely and joyfully with all of us around these tables, which point us to the greatest gift, to that full manifestation, to that hour, the dreaded cross, the joy of resurrection, the call to community and love.